As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
If you want to text the Junks throughout the show, you can do that on the Junkies text line. Brought to you by Lido Pizza, a local favorite since 1955. Serving pizza, subs, jumbo wings, and salads. Lido Pizza Square, because Lido Pizza never cuts corners. For locations or to place your order, go to LidoPizza.com. Text us at 1-800-636-1067. Standard message and data charges may apply. So the NFL draft is looming. Round one is Thursday night. Just a couple of days away. And, of course, the Commanders at this point, they only have a paltry 5 draft picks right now. They've got their number one pick at 29 overall.
You agree with Drabby that it's like fait accompli, almost a guarantee that they're going to move out of the first round?
I think it's either the first or the second round pick. And obviously you'll get more coming back if you move back in the first round. But I feel like they will move off one, if not both of those picks, in order to
just
accumulate
to get more
picks.
Just to get more, yeah.
Because they've given up picks to get Debo. They've given up picks in the Tunsil trade. They gave up picks in the Lattimore deal. So they're short on picks. I mean, they have 29, 61. They don't have a third rounder. They have a fourth rounder that came back in the Houston deal. That's number 128. Then they have a sixth and a seventh, 205 and 245. So we wanted to get into what sort of RBs are you targeting for this team if they don't, say, pick an Omarion Hampton if he slides to 29, which I don't think will happen. He seems to be getting mocked somewhere, anywhere between like 10, 15, 20, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't think he's going to make it down to 29. So if you're a Commanders fan, what sort of RBs are you looking at if you don't pick one with either the number one pick or the number two pick? Then you're talking about fourth round. Maybe you pick up a third rounder in a deal with another team. What sort of RBs are you targeting? Are there RBs that you like that are further down the board, obviously past Ashton Jeanty, past Omarion Hampton out of North Carolina?
Yeah.
Who is catching your interest?
Well, you know, I love Trevion Henderson.
Mm-hmm. Out of Ohio State.
Watched him a ton. I like Judkins, too. Now, Judkins isn't the athlete that Henderson is. He's more of the physical guy. But I don't know where those – I don't know where I'd take those guys. I don't know if I would – probably wouldn't take them late first round, but maybe if
would
I had
you
two,
take one in the size of second.
If I had two picks in the second round, maybe I'd use that second pick for them.
Right.
You know, I watched Beatute. I call him Beatute, Bajal Tootin, who was at Virginia Tech the last 2 years. He's a really good player.
He tested really well at the combine.
Yeah,
too.
He was basically their entire offense until he got hurt because their quarterback play was so dicey. It was dicey. It was average to below average. And so they countered with that with Tootin. He put up like 25 total touchdowns or maybe 27 touchdowns in 2 years. And then the Caleb Johnson kid at Iowa, I mean, he's a bigger guy. You know, he's not a fast dude, but he could be. He could probably be more of an every down back. So there's a few names out there.
He's Caleb Johnson is ranked 57th on the PFF big board.
ESPN has him 61.
Where do they project him in the third round?
I don't have a projection for him at this point.
What's interesting is when they say like your grades, like an 81 or 80, those are like starter grades, mm-hmm. right? Like,
I would think so. Yeah,
I mean there are like seven or eight backs that have grades of like 80 or higher.
Yeah.
So it's pretty freaking deep.
Yeah, I mean, it is a deep position, no doubt. I mean, you could see, I don't know, maybe not in the, you could see maybe two in the first round, then you could see a bevy of RBs go in the late second to the mid fourth.
Let me give you a name who, it's not a household name, but if you're a dork and play college fantasy football, you know who this guy is, and he can probably be had in the middle rounds. RJ Harvey
out of Central Florida. He's good. He's good, yeah.
Uber
he's
productive.
Small. He's not small the biggest.
He's 5'9", 208, but I mean, they're like Ashton Jeffy.
Most of these guys
isn't huge either, yeah. And he's going to probably go top 10.
Yep.
Super productive, big play waiting to happen. Scored 22 touchdowns his last year at Central Florida, over 1,500 rushing yards. Mm-hmm. They have him as the eighth running back on the PFF list. Here's what they say about him. He ranks well in PFF's wins above average metric due to high missed tackles forced, averages as a rusher and a receiver, and his production in the passing game. If he plays with more urgency and violence, he could be a productive NFL running back. Like, I think that's like, he's a sweet spot, like, fourth or fifth round running back in this running back class. Like, and then you don't have to burn high draft capital. You don't have to burn a second or a third round pick.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Adam Peters is going to find a productive guy that fits the system in the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah, you want a guy who can catch passes.
Which he can do.
What about a guy, though, I think is going to get a lot of support locally? The running back from Virginia Tech.
Yeah, he just mentioned Tootin.
Yeah, I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah,
he's a good player. Really good player. You know, they didn't throw the ball a ton to him because their quarterback play, like I said, was dicey. But I think he could be a good receiver out of the backfield too. And he's got deceptive speed. He's built like a freaking truck below the waist, man. He's got big thighs.
Well, he's got a couple runs. Like in 2022, he had a 70-yard run. In 24, he had an 83-yard run.
Yeah. He's got burst.
I don't know if he's.
He might not be a third rounder. He might be a fourth rounder, but maybe someone gets him in the third.
Are you looking to replace Robinson or compliment Robinson?
Me personally?
Well, yeah, all of you.
All right, here's my
view. I think Robinson will be here this year.
But like, are you looking for someone to supplant him as RB1 or just a change of pace?
Yes. Here's what I'm looking for.
Eventually, yes.
I'm looking for, this may shock you, I'm looking for the Eckler replacement because I feel like that skill set is tougher to find than the B-Rob skill set. I feel like you almost have the B-Rob skill set with Rodriguez, who's on the roster. Like, if B-Rob went down, I think you could plug in Rodriguez and you get close to the same result. He doesn't have the same package that Eckler has. I want to find a younger version of Austin Eckler to plug into this offense because I feel like the plodding two-down back that B-Rob basically is pretty easy to find and replace.
Yeah, but I don't want a plodding two down. I want a two down back that's also explosive. That's the dream.
That would be great.
Yeah.
If you can upgrade, but I'm looking for more of an Eckler type than a B-Rob type.
Like
in this offense.
Like if you're Adam Peters, you can't waste a first round pick on a running back that you're using as a third down back.
I don't think they're going to take one in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to take one in the first round.
Unless like Hampton slips to 29. If Hampton's there at 29,
he's ranked way too high to do that.
I think he's going to be gone by pick 20. The Broncos pick at 20 and they desperately need a running back. He fits the bill for them.
I mean,
because if you take a first round running back, he better be an every down back.
Right.
He's got to be your true number one.
For 20 carries, if you need that.
So I would agree. I don't think
I
don't think they're going to take a running back in the first.
No, I don't think so either.
And they might not even have a first. They might trade back.
Right.
I could see that too. But I could see them taking a running back if they had multiple picks in the second round, using one of those for an RB.
Well, that means also that you can't take Travion Henderson in the first round.
No, you take him in a second.
Okay.
No. You would take him in a second if you slipped.
I think the only guys that are worthy of the first round picks at RB are the top two guys, Jenty and
Hampton.
And Hampton, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think Henderson might slip because of that, though. But we don't pick in it. Where do we pick in the second round? We pick like 61 right now.
61. So
that'll be too late.
But if you gain an extra pick and you're picking in the low 30s, you know, mid 30s.
Dude, that would be such an exciting pick.
Low 40s.
If they trade out of the first, if they trade a 29th pick and they get like a 38th pick or something.
Yeah.
And then maybe another fourth or something. And then you could take Henderson. Mm-hmm. Or a player like that, like Cakes is talking about, mm-hmm. that would be so exciting.
I mean, CBSSports.com's draft that we talked about earlier has the Commanders moving from 29 back to 35. So it's not even that far of a move back.
Right. And then whether you get like an extra fourth or something?
There wasn't like a detailed trade package.
Yeah.
And Drabby's boy, Cam Scatterboo, he was like one of the talks of college football last mm-hmm. year. I think he's projected third round, maybe fourth.
Well, he's got an 83 grade.
Yeah, dude, he's just physical. He's hard, tough to bring down.
I mean, he's only running back who had 1,500 yards and 543 yards receiving. Everyone thinks he's just a bruiser. Not the case.
He's over 500 yards receiving is impressive when you have 1,500 on the ground. That's an impressive resume he's putting out there.
I don't know if he's a fit for the Commanders because they do want that home run hitter with the breakaway speed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think just Henderson makes me nervous as I don't think
why
he's
even in the second round.
Second round's fine, but I doubt he's going to be there. I think he's going to go early second or late first. So you'd have to take him with your very first pick. And he's not great. He's not a great receiving back. If you want Eckler's world class receiving running back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Travion Henderson's not that. I mean, he'll break a long run, but he's not in every down back.
I'll bet a dollar all the way around the board. So they don't take a first round running back.
No one's saying that. But
anybody?
If they trade out, he could be their first pick.
What about 36? I'll take that bet. They might take a running back with their first pick.
Is
Henderson worth like a mid 30s pick?
He's mocked in first rounds in a lot of these.
Yeah, maybe he is.
I think if they had two second round picks, they might use that second pick in the deeper pick in the second round. I'm not sure they'll go. Because I think if you're going to draft someone certainly in the first round or early second, that guy's got to be an every down player.
If I'm Peters, I'm just going to wait and draft Tootin. I mean,
you probably get him in the fourth.
Like his numbers that he put up at the combine were absurd. He ran a 4.32.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
He's a good player.
He ran a 10-yard split in 1.49. Isn't that the stat that I brought up a few months ago that Peters loves, the 10-yard split? I'll have to double-check that. But
yes.
He looks at one of these traits and stats and hones in on it. All the guys he picked last year scored well in that category. Over a 40-inch vertical, broad jump 10-10.
I love him.
Like
I want him.
Why wouldn't you pick him in the mid-rounds?
I want him.
Like, why would you burn a 35th pick if you trade back there where you can get Tootin at 128 or wherever you wind up getting an extra pick or 100?
Yeah, late
wherever.
Third or early fourth.
Yeah.
Let's go to Chris. Oh, from D.C. Chris, what's up, buddy? You're on with the Junkies.
What's going on, fellas? Hey, look, here's the thing, man. It's got to be Dylan Sampson. Y'all sleeping on Dylan Sampson at the University of Tennessee. My opinion, he was the second best back in college football, plus what he did against SEC talent. What he rushed for, like 24 touchdowns, something like that, 1,500 yards. And plus he can catch out of the backfield. He reminds me of a Alvin Kamara, if you will. But you know what? You still got James Pierce Jr. out there as the edge rusher that I think is going to fall to that 29th pick. I really do.
You're a Tennessee guy. You're a Tennessee guy. You love all the
Vols. You
know
what? I am. But look, here's the thing, though, Lurch. If you look at everything at the Tennessee – in the last couple of years, look at Trey Smith. He's one of the best offensive tackles in football. Where'd he come from? Tennessee. Mm-hmm. We put players out there that are dominating the league, and they have since, you know, Tennessee's back. Let's say what Josh Heupel has saved that program, and now he's putting elite players in the league. And you know what? He's going to be a surprise pick. You can get him in the second round, too. So if you wanted to trade out that pick, you can actually get him in the second round. I think he's going to follow that. And I think he's going to be a surprise pick. To me, he's a little bit more explosive than Alvin Kamara. But that's what he works at. He can catch out of the backfield, and he can play all three downs as he did. And like I said, look what he did in SEC.
Yeah, and he had big games
against Alabama. He had a big game against Georgia. Went over 100 and scored a touchdown in that game. Like, big game player.
Yeah, I don't know where he's projected. I think he's in the prospect ranking list I have. He's below the running backs we talked about.
Yeah.
But
he's fourth on the PFF board.
I don't think he's the athlete that Tootin is.
Dude, I want Tootin. I'm just watching Tootin highlights, and I'm just sitting here, and I'm just so excited.
Are they showing all his fumbles?
Well, no.
Oh, is he Antonio Gibson part two?
He loves to put the ball on the ground. The
coaches he didn't don't do it like that much.
Should coach that up. There's a guy named Tiki Barber who used to fumble all the time.
That's
he
true.
He started holding the ball funny, and then now he's money.
Love to hold the ball upright.
I don't know. He did something. They did something weird, but it helped him.
Every time somebody fumbles, everybody goes, why don't they just run like Tiki Barber
right.
did?
Yeah, do what Tiki did.
That's the move. That's the canned line.
So you're out on Tootin because of the fumbles?
No, I'm not saying I'm out on it. It's just definitely something.
I mean, Valdez wants him to drop so he can play. He can play the sound effects.
It's going to be insufferable.
Just because of the fart.
He's just waiting for it to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a big fan.
Dude, I'm desperate for
him. You're a little smitten by him now,
aren't
you?
I'm just watching Tootin highlights
Dude's
all day.
Dude's explosive.
And I know you have a huge fan base.
I have explosive Tootin.
Yeah.
Make Valdez's year if they drafted
him.
He'll
be so excited.
Oh, yeah. He'd be pumped. All right, when we come back, we will get back into the Caps' big win over Montreal last night. They have a 1-0 lead in the series. Alan May from Monumental Sports Network. He'll join us. Coming up next.
Welcome back. I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to the show. Junk's on 106.7 The Fan, Team 980 AM. Scheduled to join us shortly is Alan May, Caps analyst on Monumental Sports Network. Should give some congratulations to his on-air partner, Alexa Landestoy. Her and her husband welcomed in their baby girl. Looks like yesterday, or she tweeted about it yesterday, 13 hours ago.
Yeah.
That she came in time for the Caps to watch the Caps playoff win. So good.
Awesome.
Good for them.
Yeah,
congrats to the family that added one recently. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Good news.
All right, so we're waiting for Alan. Cakes, just your overall relief level after that. How down would you have been if they had kind of thrown that game away? Because for the first two periods, if people want to chime in, they can. 800-636-1067. For the first two periods, it looked like it was smooth sailing.
I'll
They're
be
cruising.
Honest.
They were
I'll
in total
honest.
Control. Yeah, they were.
Had the Caps lost that game in overtime, and had JP not been on vacation, I might have called out Caps. I would have been that despondent.
You would have been pissed.
Because it's just one game.
I know it's one game, but it's like a tone setter for the series. Like, it's at home. Like, the building was on freaking fire. Like, I was a little bit disappointed that through the first, I think, 10 or 11 minutes of the first period, the Caps so thoroughly dominated Montreal. They had the puck almost the whole time. They were much more physical.
They were hitting them early.
They were quicker, but they didn't really have anything to show for it. Then they got on the board, and then you felt a little bit better about it. Then they built a 2-0 lead, and you're like, okay, let's add one for insurance. Let's get to three. They couldn't quite get there in regulation. Then the third period, like the last 10 minutes.
It was all Montreal.
Montreal was just owning the Caps.
Correct.
And it was like, well, what happened to the... What happened in the first 40 or 45 minutes? Where did that go? So that was a little bit concerning. But you had to be pleased overall with Logan Thompson, the way he looked coming back outside of that. The second goal, I didn't think was very good, but he was way out of the crease. I mean, we can ask Alan about it. I believe he joins us now on the Rude Guest Hotline. He's presented by Ace Computers. Ace Computers proudly recommends Windows 11 Pro for the U.S. military, made in America. Check out acecomputers.com right now. It's Alan May, Caps analyst on Monumental Sports Network. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Alan, are you there, buddy? I'm punching him up.
Is I just lost you. I lost you for a second. Hey, you got me back?
Yeah, we got you.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
What time did you get to bed last night?
You know what? I've been being kinder to myself, so I just went straight home, and unfortunately, I ended up watching. There was two late games, Edmonton and L.A. Edmonton had a miracle comeback, but lost in overtime, and then Dallas is one of my teams as well, so I watched the end of the Dallas game, and that was spectacular, so whenever that ended, I hit bricks.
Oh, you stayed
up. So heading into overtime, I watched you guys a lot more muted, obviously, on set. What was your gut feeling heading into that overtime?
Well, I think I believed in them still that they were playing the right way, and they made just a couple of minor errors that ended up leading to the game being tied. And, you know, for 50 minutes of that game, they dominated. Mm-hmm. They went hard. There was some excellent goaltending by Montembeau, however you pronounce his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he kept them in the game.
I thought he was really good last night, yeah.
Yeah, and I was worried at the start. I was like, they were playing so well. They were knocking the hell out of the Canadians, and they were just, you know, getting point-blank, like, grade-A opportunities, and they were unable to score. And a lot of times what you've seen in the history of the game, and when I'm with Bruce Boudreau, he's one of the worst for this. He goes, oh, I worry about that because now that team's close and it means they're in it. It means you're giving them a little bit of belief. And, you know, Montreal, they're young enough and they're dumb enough to believe that they can win every game. And that is awesome, in my opinion, when you have a team that never feels like they're out of it.
Alan, what did you make of Logan Thompson's return? I thought the second goal, like, he was way out of position on that. Can you give us some insight as to why he may have been so far out of the crease there? But overall, he was really good. Stopped 33 of the 35 shots that he faced last night after a pretty long layoff.
You sound like you're complaining about a mole on Cindy Crawford, but I thought he was sensational. And on the second goal, it was a calamity of errors, and he really had to overplay that because of how out of position and the puck was bouncing all over the place. And if it goes to anyone else but Nick Suzuki, they probably would have shot. Well, and we'll say Cole Caulfield wouldn't have shot that puck. He's a goal scorer, would have waited and had the patience and the poise to outwait the goaltender. But I wasn't sure, and I'm going to take another look at it today from different camera angles, as to whether Connor McMichael may have went through and pushed Logan through the net, because he was part of that comedy of errors at the same time. And, you know, that it just led, you know, one mistake was leading to another. And that there was about a minute and a half there where the game got away from the Capitals as far as the structure of what they were doing all game. And the great thing is it wasn't forced by Montreal. It's a very fixable error or two. And, you know, they'll clean that part up. I'm confident, because I saw so many things that I liked in the first 50 minutes of the game and then all of the overtime, that, you know, Spencer and his coaching staff obviously picked up over the season, said, we're going to use this. I like this. We're going to do this. Someone used something against them, and they implemented that in their own game. So I liked all that. And then as far as Logan, once again, he came out last night, and right from the get-go, he looked confident. His team looked confident in him. And he looked like he was well rested and ready to go.
Hmm. Were you surprised that he went with him?
You know, when I saw him in the starter's net at practice, and he'd been on the ice now, about a week, he'd been on the ice every day. And you know what? I believe in loyalty to your players and your team. And I thought Charlie Lindgren was sensational down the stretch as well, but 31-6-6. Was Logan Thompson over the course of the season. You play him, you get a win. You force everyone to play well. Basically, everyone did play well. And it's a matter of, you know, everyone combining an effort that was very successful for the majority of the season. And they went out and they played. So many players up their game. And you could tell that this group of guys was actually waiting for the playoffs to start. They couldn't continue to play every game as though it was a playoff game like they were at the start of the year. They would have been worn out. And last night, it looked like they had been saving it. They had energy all game long. Logan looked, like I said, sensational, but it was a top-notch effort from everyone.
Yeah, one of those guys that stepped up was Beauvillé, who had to with Protas out, and
he was really good.
He gets an assist on the OV game winner. He pots a goal as well for a 2-point night, so that was a huge performance by him.
Well, guys, I'll help you out on his name. They're calling him Bovey, so yeah. Just call him Bovey from now, or little Bovechkin.
Bovey, yeah.
I like it.
And I think Ovi came up with that name on the spur of the moment. But, you know, when they looked at him, once again, the Caps are doing something different over the last year, just over a year now. And the players that they're targeting, that, you know, they're looking at their analytics, they're paying them the appropriate amount of money now. They're not going too long with contracts on players that were head scratchers. And Bovey's no different than the rest of these guys as far as what a great pickup at the deadline. And they were very methodical. They had planned the trade deadline for a few months as to what they had to do to open up money to get Ryan Leonard out of Boston College with the signing bonus and how it works on the rookie entry level contract. And then realizing they were going to expose Verana, who would probably get picked up or sent to Hershey. And then they needed to add a proven playoff performer. And this is one of those under the radar things, because coming into last night, I believe Beauvillier had 31 points in the playoffs in 55 games. Hmm. And he's had two really nice playoff stretches in his career. And hopefully this is the third, but he was on point every single shift last night. He had so much energy. He was flying. He was a dog out of bone going after the puck. He created scoring chances. And when you think of it, his goal was a result of pucks to the net, get to the paint, slam it home. His goal, Ovechkin's goal, stop at the net, look for the junk, and find it. And you have to score ugly, you have to win ugly, and the Caps did it. It was a great game, top to bottom. And, you know, I still look, even though Montreal came back, the Caps dominated that, should have won it. And in years gone by, they probably wouldn't have won that game,
right,
other than in 2018. But they put the pedal to the metal all night long. They didn't wait for the game to come to them. They went after the game. And as I said, they've got a few things to clean up. And they're easy fixes, and when they do that, they'll be a far better team.
Alan, what'd you think of the officiating? Carlson was clearly tripped by one of those guys, no call, and then
the Willie hit,
and a dead clock line change from Josh Anderson. He just knocked him over. That should have been a 2 minute.
Well, also the Dubois slashing.
The
call,
Dubois slashing
was egregiously,
I mean, there
bad.
Was some. I thought there were some terrible calls slash non calls last night.
Oh, there were, and, you know, that's the unfortunate part of the playoffs is we end up seeing really bad officiating time and time again. And I don't know if that these guys are overwhelmed, and I'll never buy that they have the toughest job in the world. They chose to be referees.
Right.
No one asked them to be. They chose to be referees. They're highly compensated. They get very nice pensions. So I never feel sorry for them, but there was a lot of errors they should have been better, areas they should have been better at. But at the same time, you could say the Caps got away with a few, but I thought the Dubois call was horrible. He was taken out. He fell to the ground, and they called him. I don't know if that was a slash or a trip, but regardless, he should not have been a penalty. And I just look at that. But once again, and you know, there's a little bit of conspirator in me. Is that I believe both linesmen were French, and one of the referees was French.
Ooh,
oh, there you go.
Interesting.
They were playing an original 16. I look at that stuff, and there's certain referees that I go, oh, the Caps are screwed tonight. This guy loves to call. There's certain guys that love to call penalties on Russians that aren't penalties on anyone else, especially if they're from Western Canada. So I go into my conspiracy mode on some of these guys.
Now, is that the same reffing crew that will be for the entire series, or do they switch them up?
You know what? I should know that after all of these years.
Oh, okay.
And I hope it's not the same guys. If it is, they have a referee supervisor. And I did not look at who the referee supervisor for the series is last night.
Right.
But typically, most of those guys, I saw one guy's name. I hope I never see him in an arena that I'm in again. was up in one of the Canadian games. And it was their supervisor. And I hope I never see him doing a Caps game, because they're doomed if he is. But, normally the supervisors will get all over their guys and, about the missed calls and calls they should have made. And they're smarter guys. They're that generation of referee that you could actually speak with. You used to be able to have a back and forth with referees. There's a lot of referees that'll just, they'll sneer at you as they call a penalty, or they just put their hand up and they won't talk to you. So it's a very different world come playoff times. At who can handle the pressure and who cannot.
How do you feel about game two tomorrow night? What do the Caps have to do much better, especially in that third period?
Well, I think, well, the biggest thing is just the little puck management things, and we'll probably highlight that in our pregame show tomorrow night, but simple little plays of getting the puck out of your zone versus, you know, toss it in the middle of the ice and letting the other team stay alive for 25, 35 seconds of momentum. And just get the puck over the blue line when you're getting it out of your zone. You've got to find a way, and you can't do anything but like throw a puck between your legs to nobody. And then at the offensive zone blue line, and Locker's been saying this, is, you know, I don't know, he's been on TV about 100 years now, but Locker is always talks about blue line management and throwing the puck in correctly at the offensive zone blue line. When you don't have a play, if you can't put a tape to tape, and you're not going to beat, you know, there's two guys there, there's three guys there, get it down deep on the boards, keep it on the wall, and get it below the hash marks, preferably below the red line, and then that way you can get a transitional defense where you get all five guys in the middle of the ice and you take the game away like that. So it's a simple little puck management play. The game is smarter than ever. It's faster than ever. And when players don't do it, you know, they're cheating the game a little bit. They've got to get the cheat out of some of them and they stick to the basics, the hockey 101 of it. And sometimes it's better to play it safe. There's other times you can go for it. But in those instances, you got to be correct at all times at your blue line plays, getting it out and getting it in.
Alan, thanks as always. Good to catch up. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, take care, guys.
Yep, you too, man. Thank you, buddy. Alan May, Capitals analyst on Monumental Sports Network. Be sure to watch him throughout the series.
By the way, did you guys, I think Locker and Joe B were talking about last night, but the young defenseman for Montreal, Lane Hutson, do you see how much he looks like Ovi?
I did not. I did not see that comp.
Yeah,
His brother's in the cap system.
Hudson, yeah.
Yep.
He could be Ovi's younger brother.
I did not know that they were like doppelgangers.
It's kind of crazy.
I'll have to look at it side by side.
Yeah, I'll show you the picture of him.
Cool. Alan May, thanks again to him. Ryan Wilson, he'll join us coming up at 9 o'clock. We'll break down the NFL draft with him in just over 20 minutes. So I'm going to bring up an NFL name that I'm sure everybody in this room knows, and it's just sad to see like his life just spiraling out of control. Did you guys see the mugshot of Justin Blackman that came out over the weekend?
No.
Well, Justin
Why do
Blackman,
I know Justin Blackman? Remind me.
He was a top pick of the Jaguars.
Receiver?
Yeah, he was a wide receiver out of Oklahoma State. So he's 35 now.
He looks terrible.
He was arrested early Saturday, charged with public intoxication in Payne County, Oklahoma. His mugshot is just him in an orange T-shirt. You know, his face is big and puffy.
Is he from Oklahoma State?
Yeah.
Went to Oklahoma State, and I saw an article that accompanied it about when he was being scouted coming out of Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I guess the Bucks, they sent one of their scouts to the campus of Oklahoma State in Stillwater.
Uh-huh.
And they knew a bar where he hung out. And they said, we want you to go to this bar for like two straight weeks and just sit in the bar and log how many times this guy's coming in. And the guy went back to the Bucks and said, he came in basically every day. They immediately took him off their board just because he was in, like, they knew he had a drinking problem before he even left college.
Right.
Like, and his, I mean,
he looks unbelievably awful.
He looks terrible. And he's 35 years old. Like, his life is just going to, like, if he makes 50, it's a huge upset.
Yeah.
If he makes 40 at this point, the way
how long did he last in the league?
Well, he washed out pretty quickly.
2 years, I think.
Yeah. He wasn't in the NFL for very long. But I saw his mugshot on Twitter. I was like, that looks like Justin Blackman. But
he was passed out on the steps of the library on campus at Oklahoma State.
That doesn't even look like him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still hanging around Oklahoma State?
Is that where he was arrested?
That's what it says.
I guess so. Hanging out in Stillwater.
Oklahoma State University Police Department says Blackman was passed out on the steps of the Edmund Lowe Library on campus.
That's it. That's where he was.
What's he doing still hanging out on campus? Is he coaching? I can't imagine he's coaching.
I don't think he's coaching.
I mean, maybe he's working. It's not uncommon for college stars to go back and work on campus or near it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what he's doing. But
God, that's
terrible. Doesn't even look like him.
No, I know. It doesn't even look like the same human.
Terrifying.
It doesn't.
So he got a 4-game suspension in 2013 for violating the league's substance abuse policy before later being suspended indefinitely for another violation of the policy. Marijuana possession in 2014. NFL denied him reinstatement for the 2015 season.
Honestly, he doesn't look that different from these poor, destitute people you will see on the streets of, like, Philadelphia. I was in Philadelphia all weekend in 3 or 4 days. And you see these people, and they're just... They're obviously, they've got drug problems, alcohol problems. They can't even keep their pants on. You know, I saw a woman, and I just, this is honestly a thing for me. I just don't carry cash. And I'm not one that gives out a lot of cash, but sometimes people are so down on their luck that you scrape up whatever you can. This woman, Jason, she looked so out of it. She's probably in her early 30s, though, just out of it. Her pants were halfway down, and she was just like pulling her pants up, and she was asking for money. Can you help me out?
Right.
And I felt like a douche because I'm leaving this nice hotel, and, you know,
right.
I have all this camera equipment with me, and I literally say, I don't have anything. I didn't.
Yeah, she doesn't know the misfortune of running into you. You never have any cash.
Well, I would think now, nope, not that many people carry cash. Although, do you see this, not to be political, it's not political at all, but that Christy Noem was robbed. You saw in the D.C. restaurant? I don't know if you guys saw that. She had $3,000 in cash in her purse.
Oh, that tells me she's about to go to the casino. Well, if you got $3,000 in cash, you're either heading to the...
She was going to the casino.
You're going to two places. You're either going...
Who carries $3,000
You're going
cash?
To two places. You're either headed to the bank to put that cash in the bank, or you're headed to the casino.
Or you're just a shady politician, and who knows what's going on.
I mean, I guess that could, that could be a third option.
Who carries that amount of cash when you're just at dinner?
I get nervous
in D.C.
I get nervous if I have like over $100 in my wallet. I just feel weird about it. Like, I don't want to be carrying $200 or $300 on me at all times, let alone $3,000.
Yeah,
that is an absurd amount of cash.
So,
speaking of that Philadelphia neighborhood that you're in, you should YouTube. You ever YouTube the Kensington Avenue part of Philadelphia?
No. Never.
It's unbelievable. This guy just drives around on his bike with his camera.
Yeah.
And you would not believe how many drugged out people that literally, they're zombies.
They're like the ones standing up.
It's Kensington Avenue in Philadelphia. It's the worst thing ever.
You know what they also have? So they do have that. And you do. And I've seen those people just like standing there, and they're obviously like, I don't know if it's fentanyl
bent over.
Does that. I don't know what it is. Yeah. You do see that.
I don't even know how they. Well, they don't just fall over. They're just bent over.
I know.
And they're out.
I think 2 weekends ago, I was driving down New York Avenue, heading into D.C., probably going to Capitol. I know where I was going. The Altcast.
Yeah.
I was driving to the Altcast. Right. And I was stopped at a light, and it was near the Heck Company building on New York Avenue. So I'm heading down into the city, and I look off to my right, and there's a guy lying on his back. It looked like he was trying to pull the move like Morton Anderson used to pull. But
I know a guy that could do that, actually.
I think we know a guy.
Yeah.
But it's broad daylight. He's on his back.
Yeah.
He's lying on the concrete. Okay.
Yeah.
Legs
straight
thrown
up.
Back
right. over his head. Yeah.
And he's still wearing clothes. Like he's not like
he's trying not doing to, anything.
He's not like trying
but he's
to
just form, out of his mind.
But he's it's like
no, it's horrible.
How did you get to that spot?
It's so horrible. It's horrifying.
And there are like 15 other people just walking around like it's just normal. Like,
because you don't know what to do.
Normal business.
You don't know what to do.
And I tweeted it. I felt bad about it, but I tweeted it. I tweeted it for clicks.
Well, you know what else? You know what they
I'm
do?
Not proud.
Jason, there's one thing that they do. My buddy was hipping me to this. I didn't know this. But like on Broad Street. So we were standing on Broad Street in downtown Philly.
Yep.
That they have these motorcycle guys.
Okay.
And they, like at night, and they pop wheelies.
Okay.
And I don't know what's going on, but it's like a thing in Philly. These motorcycle guys go around, zipping around on their motorcycles, and just like, they're so loud.
And it's a lot of.
In the middle of traffic, they're going the wrong way. They don't care.
That happens in D.C. sometimes too, where all of a sudden there'll be like 40, like, BMX motocross type bikes, not like Harleys,
yeah.
The kind that you're jumping on dirt mounds in during a Monster Jam,
right?
Do popping wheelies, zooming down the street like 80 miles an hour.
I was behind some teenagers And I was a little bit disconcerted because I didn't know what to do. As I was driving, as we were arriving, I don't even know what it was, Thursday evening, and there were just a bunch of teenagers on regular bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were doing is they were popping wheelies, and then they were so gifted. They were unreal.
Talented talents.
They were just going like this. They were swerving on their wheelies, like all over the road,
right?
It's like taking over the whole road. Mm-hmm. It was kind of scary. Like, you're like, what are these guys doing?
Mm-hmm.
But they could go for hundreds of yards.
Yeah.
And they're going, like, a car's coming in, and they swerve away from it. And they swerve, and they're just doing this bit. And I don't know what it is.
I thought I was accomplished if at, like, 15, that I could ride my bike with just no hands on the handlebars, just straight.
Yeah.
Like, on one wheel.
They're destined to just run right into a building.
Yeah, I mean, they don't care. They're swerving with wheelies. I've never seen it before. They should be in the circus. They could make money from it. But I get the idea that they're up to no good. I don't know what's going on.
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I didn't want them to run into me. I didn't want them to get in front. I just let them go.
Right.
Just let
them just. Sure.
I basically stopped.
You gave them a wide berth.
Wide berth. Yeah. Big time. But yeah, I don't know, man. When you see these people like the Justin Blackmans of the world, like how could you have the world as your oyster? First round pick.
First round pick. Fifth pick in the draft.
He's just an alcoholic.
Yeah, he's just got issues. He's an addict.
Can't kick it.
Yeah, I mean, for sure he's going to die.
Yes.
Yeah, he's going to die a premature death.
Or he's going to end up in jail. He's going to do something where he's going to be in jail for 40 years.
They say he was heavily intoxicated and could not answer their questions before he was arrested.
Right.
Did it say what time he was arrested?
Saturday. It just says Saturday. He was passed out on the steps. Doesn't say the time.
I must admit, he's 35 now.
Yeah.
At 35, there were a few instances where I drank myself into oblivion.
It's happened.
Like, it's happened. But
it's happened.
It was a one-off.
That was
like a Dewey Beach, you know, like a special circumstance.
That's true.
Like,
you have passed out in public, like at a bar.
I don't think
that's ever happened to me.
Guilty as charged.
I don't think I've ever passed out in public.
Like, for me, mostly a one-off. For him, I'm guessing that's almost like an everyday type of occurrence. That's your dividing line.
Yeah.
Where he needs to go into like serious intensive rehab. And I just need to not drink more than 3 or 4 beers at a sitting. Where things just go kind of off the rails. All right, when we come back, we'll get back into the NFL draft. Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports NFL writer, will join us. Draft just a couple days away. Commanders currently pick at 29. If he thinks they're going to pick at 29 or they're going to move off that pick, we'll talk to Ryan Wilson next.